Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, end of the month, another
end
month
of the
gone.
Quarter, month, end of the whole. Unbelievable that as we stand right now, markets will be positive for the quarter.
Yeah, it's great.
That's pretty amazing, right?
Yeah, considering the way things were going.
Yep, the worst, you know, the hysteria about the worst start of a year in history, you know, the worst February through, you know, January through February in 25 years. And then you get the March was the best start of a month since 1982 or whatever it was. And then here we are with a fresh round of stimulus by every Fed that's out there, every central bank. And now we have what appears to be a panic move by our Fed. They were busy talking up the whole idea that, well, we're not going to have some rate increases and not as many. And then the next few days walked out all sorts of guys saying, well, we're going to have, you know, probably, you know, good employment and inflation and all that. And then Janet Yellen comes out today because markets weren't really reacting very well. You know, she needs markets to go up to feel happy that she can go home and say, well, she did her job. And pretty much dismissed everything. Markets were trading sideways until she started talking, down a little bit. There was some negative news out of Japan, out of China, out of Europe. The banks weren't doing well. And then she started talking today as dovish can be. They call her a soft dove.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, there's a hard dove.
I don't know what a hard dove is.
I guess it's like a range of dovishness. So you
what
have
is hard dove. Does hard dove mean you're more dovish?
No, because I think
you're hard dove.
Soft.
Or I think, you're less dovish.
Well, I think that the idea of dovish versus hawkish. So dovish is a soft kind of bird, and a hawk is a mean bird, I guess.
Well, in these terms, in this context, yes.
So the softer it is, the more dovish the stances, the more accommodative, and she's probably more accommodative.
Seems the opposite to me.
Well, yeah.
I mean, I would say hard dove would be hardcore dove.
Yeah,
just right. Really super soft,
like a leftist dove.
But that's probably not what they mean.
Yeah. So I mean, it looks like to me that from everything that was put into place by her predecessors, that she's as dovish or probably more dovish than Bernanke was, if that can be imagined.
I don't think it's possible.
And what's interesting is here we are 8 years later and still the same kind of, you know, more well, and more.
Isn't that what you want?
You know, you want that, but at the same time, there. I think, I'm not, at this point it's getting cloudy, but I think there was a time that we didn't rely on central bank stimulus and continual liquidity in the systems to keep things rolling.
Well, the way I see it, when they were less involved, which would be in the 1930s, it was worse.
Didn't they start back? They started back
then. I mean, you could talk about this till you blew in the face and blame all kinds of different people. And then when they were a little more involved in the 70s, it was kind of better. And now they're really involved. And if we're going to call this, at least I would, a 40-year cycle of a depression that we're in, as some people have said on, you know, for years. It's not, you know, you can live with it.
You can definitely live with it because there's liquidity in the system and stocks get carried up, and that's a good thing in general. And there, but the problem is that price discovery is warped, and the big question of the day obviously is how does it end? When does it end, or does it ever end? At this point, it doesn't look like it ever ends.
Well, that you would say that in at a moment where it's starting to end.
Oh, maybe. That could be. So let me tell you about some of the things that I thought were highlights from her speech today. So one of the things they talked about was that there's no plan that's set in stone. So trying to make sure that people stay on their toes, that, you know, depending on economic developments and whatever monetary policy they will think of and come to the markets with will be a response to the economy and all the different things that happen. So in other words, they could do what they want. You know, saying again that, you know what, they don't have a plan, but the plan is that they will do whatever it takes. Okay. And one of the big things they said is that they will make sure to keep it on par with the employment inflation and inflation goals that were assigned to the Fed by Congress. Well, now, as she followed up in this discussion, this is what's really interesting. They talked about how, well, there is some inflation, but the inflation outlook has become somewhat more uncertain since the turn of the year. And in part was the reasons related to the outlook for economic growth, which that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. Because there is inflation. They had all talked about it. We hit the goal that they were looking for, just about or right there. And we're at the employment goal. So basically what they're telling us is to throw out that playbook. That they can, once again, there's no plan. They'll do what they want. But one of the things they said, and you can go to DH Unplugged and check on the show notes. I put together about, what, one, two, three, four, six or seven key points of the speech. Was that there was numerous references to the non-US or the global economic condition. China's slowing, a lot of uncertainty that's going on around the world. And the Fed does not ever really talk about something outside the US unless it's something very significant.
So yeah, I noticed that.
So it tells me, I don't know if you get the same vibe out of this, that there's something much worse that they're letting on to in the global markets.
Well, I would say, I mean, the two of us have discussed the potential for all kinds of bad things.
But I mean, well, in other words, the global.
I mean, you got this immigration crisis. You've got this, you know, debt crisis. You've got just a mess. And you may have the Brexit, which will screw everything up, supposedly, or not.
Is that going to happen?
What?
Is that going to happen?
The Brexit?
Yeah.
I personally don't think it will, but I think it has potential. I mean, if some crazy thing, it all it needs, I think, because it's coming up.
Yeah.
So all it needs is a couple more of these, like, attacks, I think, ISIS attacks on the continent, or maybe a good one in England. And
Does England think that if they leave the Eurozone, they're going to be exempt from terrorist attacks?
No, but it brings brings attention to the fact that the Eurozone doesn't provide any extra anything. It doesn't do anything. What does it do? What is the point of it as far as the Brits are concerned?
No, there was nothing. It's all about Germany.
Yeah, it's a German operation. Yeah,
exactly. By the way, Brexit, for those of us that maybe are not on the same page here, there's always these acronyms or these words that are created. It's the British, it stands for, I guess, the British exit from the Eurozone. Now, remember, Britain.
Well, actually, it's the British exit not from the Eurozone, but from the EU.
The EU, right.
They're not really in the Eurozone.
Well, they're not on the same currency.
Right. That's what the Eurozone is.
But they have the same travel issues, right? You can go back and forth without the passports as much, right?
Yeah.
So there's no borders, so to speak.
Yeah, that's the Schengen agreement. That's different still.
Oh, okay. Well, basically, I know nothing about this. Talking out my ass. But no, seriously, it's this whole idea that somehow they got put into this block without some of the benefits, you know, as many of other countries did first of all, with the border issues, with the cross currency, a single currency, with a variety of trade benefits. They got some trade benefits out of it. But
yes, that's what the argument is. The trade benefits are worth it all.
Right.
Because now they can trade freely within the economic zone. That's all, you know, there's no tariffs or any issues. But there's arguments to be made that why does the British be trading with them anyway. And who's going to, the tariff thing is kind of passe. They're not going to get tariffed. They believe that the guys who are pro-Brexit, they believe that you can do fine business with Canada, Australia, and the United States and not even do any business with the EU, even though that would never happen. But the problem that they have is, I think there's a couple overriding problems with the British. They don't like the idea of being part of a welfare system that allows or some people don't like the part of this welfare system where there's a lot of Polish that actually commute into England to do various jobs, and they have children, and you get a certain stipend or something above and beyond your pay for the kids, and that just gets shipped straight out of the country right to Poland where the people still live. And they find that to be annoying, and they want that backed off because it's apparently become a really big deal to work in the UK and then use this welfare benefit for the children. That's one thing. And then the other thing is they don't like being told what to do by Brussels, and that includes almost everything. I'm surprised the French put up with it, but luckily Brussels, the Belgians, are kind of sympathetic to the French needs. But for example, if you're a cheese maker, there's been certain kinds of cheeses that traditionally have been ripened on wooden platters, or there's pieces of wood, which is now, oh, you can't do that because it's not sanitary. By the EU law, you have to use plastic and this sort of thing. So it's become annoying to certain people in the EU or in Britain.
Did you know, speaking of food, all these health fanatics about food. Now, you know, obviously you bring up where there could be major problems. This is all because of the mass amount of kind of these chain food stores and the ridiculous level of stock that they keep of food and how they kind of put all this junk into it that, or maybe not, that something's not right. I don't remember years ago having this much of a craziness. I mean, people, you know, you always hope that people would wash their hands after they got out of the bathroom, right? You know, that sign that was posted, you know, employees must wash their hands.
Right.
You're like, okay, I hope that they abide by that. But this, you know, all the other things that made food actually great, which, I mean, you know, cooking on a plank is the same thing as cheese on a plank that maybe added some flavor. I mean, why are we, what is the whole hubbub about all this?
And what were you, the positive or the negative hubbub?
Well, what is everybody so crazy about all these things? It's like,
oh, because there's a belief that, and I think I kind of subscribe to it, that the industrial food business, where you just manufacture tons of stuff that has been massaged genetically and otherwise to produce a lot of stuff cheaply, has created potential health issues.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's the mass production problem.
Yeah.
It wasn't when...
Well, that's
when,
why they're all bent out of shape about it, because they right. don't like this food is they believe is making them sick.
Yeah, because, I mean, if anybody's ever traveled to Europe and you go to Italy and you could eat... They put just a piece of chicken on a plate and it's delicious.
Yeah.
You know, they put
the bread's
just...
better, too.
Everything's better. And you come back here and everything is tasteless comparatively. We've talked about this 100 times, you and I.
Yeah.
And
it's a pet peeve of yours, this and the bare feet.
Not the bare feet, the shoes off.
Shoes off.
Shoes off in the airport, where it's unsanitary. And I say something every time I go through the machine. I ask, when's the last time that you guys sprayed and disinfected this area? Every time, every single time I go through it. I just say,
I'm going to start doing that.
Yeah, when is the last time you disinfected that? It goes, not enough, just not enough. Anyway, the markets moved up today. Let's just get back to Fed for a second. Markets moved up, except for one sector, one specific sector. A lot of stocks, you know, did their thing, but one entire sector did lousy today. You know what that was?
No.
Banks.
Oh, banks, yeah.
I thought this was kind of interesting. We had Bank of America down like 2%, SunTrust down 1.5%, JP Morgan down 1%, Wells Fargo down 1.5%. And I thought it was kind of interesting because one of the things that banks were really excited about was the whole idea that, well, interest rates will go up, yield curve will steepen, you'll stretch out a bit, and you'll have this opportunity, blah, 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 all this. They weren't really happy at how things went recently. The, you know, kind of was a squashed yield curve and things didn't really play out for them. The potential for negative rates in other countries, all these problems. Now they go back to where we were, where rates are coming down today and bonds are being bought and the Fed is, you know, actively involved here again. And they're not happy with that either. So rates going up, rates going down seems to not make the bank stocks very happy. One of the worst performers this year.
Yeah, but they're still way up from what they were like a while back.
There's no question about that. There's no question. But it's kind of weird that in a pretty broad-based rally that we had 1% on, give or take, 1% on, I think three quarters of percent almost on the Dow, 100 points on the Dow, about 0.88 on the S&P 500, over 1% on the NASDAQ, almost 2.5% on the small caps today. And even the biotechs, which had some just horrible news overnight with more congressional inquiries into some companies over pricing and all that, which were down horribly in the beginning of the day, ended up positive by the end of the day. The banks couldn't get out of their own way. I give you that they have been up for a while, but it's very interesting that what they didn't like at the beginning of the year has been reversed a bit in terms of interest rates and the central banks, and they're still not happy. So
yeah, well, the way I look at it, I think the banks are overpriced.
Some of them are. Some of them would be argued that their book value is not much higher than their actual value of the stock itself and the asset values that they have. So, you know, enterprise value, breakup values and all that. But, you know, it is something to see. It must still, again, this is where my concern has been in terms of just not from an execution standpoint, but just, you know, thinking this through for a second, that there's panic by the central banks around the world. Yellen capped that today. The conversation with Shinzo Abe over the weekend was that they will have more, they're going to have more stimulus, but since it seems, this is kind of the subtext, since it seems that the quantitative easing and the low interest rates and pushing the yen didn't really do much, they're still in a recession again. I think they're in their fourth recession in like 5 years. They're going to have to do something with fiscal, with either taxes or some kind of other fiscal stimulus rather than you know, utilizing central bank types of policy. And he's going on to say that, well, we'll look at this, and depending on what happens, we'll look at this in May. So holding out a carrot out there, right? And then talking about how this whole tax thing, they need to raise taxes again. Last time they raised taxes, it was a disaster. The economy immediately went into recession. And the reason they need to raise taxes is because they need to pay for all of these bond interest and get things back to normal in terms of servicing the incredibly large amount of debt they have now from all this quantitative easing. Right? Because they're if not the ratings companies will potentially downgrade them again. So that's supposed to go into play in 2017. And now they're talking about, well, we'll see what happens. We'll talk more about that in May. We may have to postpone that. So there's a lot of panic going on. And I think that this was very clearly capped by Yellen. Now, we'll say also that we know that the global economy is not doing well. Just tonight, we saw that Japan's industrial production dropped the most since 2011 for the month of February. And it's falling exponentially. See, their currency has been coming up dramatically compared to where it was. So
yes, this is true.
But the bright note is that it appears that the employment situation in the U.S. Now, by the way, this is the new one, right? Well, we saw GDP was revised to 1.4% for the fourth quarter. That was on Friday when the markets were closed. We saw that revision, which was a pretty big revision, by the way. The size economy that we have, a revision from 1% to 1.4% is enormous.
It's outrageous.
How outrageous,
like 40% off.
It's not like you, well, you know, we didn't count that $100 over there. Oh, yeah. That's a rounding error on this one here. That doesn't add up to 40% differential.
No, it's ridiculous.
Unbelievable. So we have GDP saying that we're pretty much in a, even though it's at 1.4%, in a funk. Manufacturing in a funk. Spending is down. You know, et cetera, et cetera. However, we keep on coming back to the fact that employment is good. Now, the latest thing that you're starting to hear is, well, you know, if we were to take GDP versus employment, you got to say that employment will be really the appropriate thing to look at in terms of the strength of an economy. I can see that in a way. That kind of makes sense. But then now discounting, you know how this is done, right? Discounting that GDP is really horrible.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like
you just take this looks good. Let's talk about this.
Yeah. Let's just only talk about the employment because really, and I like when they say this, GDP is backward looking. If it's not good, it's bad. Or if it is good, oh, we got a 3% print. Now, see, now that is really where we thought things should be. That's right. And now you're going to start seeing, by the way, the dollar has started moving lower. That is going to add a headwind, a tailwind to certain stocks. We know that a great example is Caterpillar. Caterpillar has been having a lot of trouble due to the fact the dollar has strengthened dramatically. And obviously, there are other places that have a much lower value of their currency construction firms, mining operations can actually purchase the same equipment from at a much cheaper price. Well, we keep on hearing about this constant currency issue, right? And that's what has been the appeasement for, on a constant currency basis, blah, 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 blah. Now, if the dollar drops and things are better for these companies, are they going to look at the constant currency basis then?
No.
Why not?
Because it won't look as good. It's like a Ponzi. It's not a Ponzi. It's like a three-card Monty.
Yeah, yeah. We'll put that over. The weather warning one right in there in case we need it. The constant currency thing right over there. And then political instability issues over here. The other one is, the big word is transitory inflation over here, right? And just, all right, pick a card. You know, it's like kind of a game where you can pick what game was that? Mad Libs. Remember Mad Libs?
Yeah, Mad Libs, where you just wrote the numbers. I wrote the words in.
Right.
Adjective.
I need an adjective. Let's see. For currency, constant currency. Use one of these words and plug it in. Plug it in your report.
It'd also be buzzword bingo. You could turn it in.
Exactly what it is. Anyway, small business hiring has been doing pretty well. There's a little chart we put up on DH Unplugged. Again, you can check this out under the show notes. This was the March 2016 Paychecks IHS Small Business Jobs Index Survey. It's a mouthful. But there's a cool chart and shows the heat map of where things have been good for hiring and where things haven't been so good for hiring. And along the West Coast, inclusive of all the Pacific Barrier states, we saw a little bit of a drop, about a 0.5% drop. The biggest drop we saw was in the Midwest, in all of the Dakotas.
Northern Midwest. Yeah. Yeah, well, a lot of that has to do with the North Dakota's oil business.
Yep, all that. And same thing in Texas and that region down there.
Same thing.
The biggest gainers were in the Northeast, and I guess the mid to southeast was
snow shoveling.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't know. It seems like a logical thing to conclude.
Yeah.
And actually, a bunch of part-time snow shovelers.
Yeah. What if they count Uber drivers? I mean,
what are they doing up in the north? I don't know how you count Uber.
If somebody gets an Uber job, does that count in the payrolls? Because that would be absolutely incredible. Why not? Because they're 1099s?
I don't know how the reporting goes with the government, though. I mean, yeah, there's 1099s. There has to be 1099s or something like that, but they're not full time. Yeah, no, it's a 1099. That's exactly what it would be.
Somebody out there
don't get reports until the end of the year. They're not giving them up daily, weekly, monthly.
Why not? If it's the jobs numbers, why not? They're giving monthly updates.
I don't think they're asked for them.
Well, if somebody happens to know if Uber and Lyft and some of these other types of programs are utilized or not. For like initial claims or for jobs numbers, which, again, I have no idea. I don't think they are. I don't think John thinks they are either. But if they are, that would be pretty incredible. That would be pretty much the entire employment numbers that we've seen, right? Anyway, so that's the jobs report. So anybody knows that about Uber, let us know. All right, let's move along here. Virgin America. I don't know if you've seen this news, but the airline, there's been rumor. There's been conjecture. There's been commentary. And reports as well, by the way, that the airline is up for sale and JetBlue and Alaska Air are now planning bids.
Well, I hope JetBlue buys them, not Alaskan.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, that would really give Alaska a lot more compared to JetBlue.
It's a poorly run, my experience, because I have all these carriers out here, is Alaskan used to be this great carrier. And then ever since they had that one wreck, out where the plane just took a nosedive into the ocean and killed everybody, Ever since that moment, the carrier has been terrible. They have their food's no good. They used to brag about their food. The food's no good. They're always canceling flights. Well, I used to take them up to Seattle all the time, and I would say out of three flights, one was either delayed by at least an hour or canceled.
Hmm.
So I just stopped taking them. I just take Southwest.
Yeah, Southwest has a good reputation. Really good.
Now, JetBlue, which I think I liked it actually when they started. I think it's not as good as it used to be. It's more shoddy. Is a good airline. It's cheap, and they have some modern things they do that make it cheap. And then you have Virgin, which I liked when they first started. It was like flying in a discotheque, and Virgin America.
And I haven't flown them, by the way. I flew Virgin Atlantic. Which
it's
is
different.
Great.
Yeah, it's different operation.
They had a masseuse on board.
What?
When I flew, there was a masseuse on board.
Yeah. Well, I think they canceled that.
Yeah.
They used to also get you a free flight if you entertained.
What does that
it's
mean?
Like you were a singer with guitar.
Yeah.
You can get fly free.
Oh.
But that stuff's all done. But the thing with Virgin America is that they had all these amenities. It was a very cool. You could upgrade to first class for $50 if there was any seats available. First come, first serve, that sort of thing. That's all been killed. Mm. Now it's just another carrier.
I'm surprised that Branson's selling this. I mean, I don't know if it's not as... I don't know what's going on with it, but...
I think the problem with him is that he has to compete with Southwest.
Mm.
He's in the South. He's in the heart of Southwest country. And he has to compete with them because he just decided he's not going to, you know, just throw his arms up in the air like, you know, United and all these other guys. I mean, the flights from Oakland to Seattle, for example, typically about $60-$70. It's hard to make money unless you fill every plane and you move them out and in and you fly. I mean, you have to be a Southwest type operation. You know, you use cattle cars.
Right. Canadian energy companies. This was great. Remember we talked about last week how many of the energy companies did secondaries and it was a great plan because they could replenish the monies on their balance sheets and pay off debt and have enough money to live another day if enough oil stayed low. Remember that whole discussion? We talked about this. Well, Canadian energy companies that have surplus cash for whatever reason are buying back their bonds at a significant discount. So there's some bonds out there that are trading, let's say, at 60 cents on the dollar. So they're just going out and buying them back.
That seems like a smart thing to
do. Yeah, reduction in leverage overall. And, you know, they just blow them out. So therefore, they don't even have to hold them anymore. So they get a 40% discount and they don't have to pay off the yield on it anymore. Now, whether or not they need money in the future and what yield they'll have to actually pay to get any money is another question. So they have to be very careful with that.
They're hoping for the best.
Yeah, exactly. We're hoping that the worst is over, that oil is hit a bottom.
Well,
yep.
May stay here for a while.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, we saw that last week the build was, as a matter of fact, at 10:30 in the morning tomorrow, we'll see the new report on Wednesdays. You see the DOE, Department of Energy, and EIA comes out, and the API comes out. I think it's API on Tuesday evenings. But we saw a build last week of, I think it was close to 11 million barrels, which was enormous compared to what expectations were. We saw the last few weeks before that of 2 and 3 million barrels, which is pretty big, but 11 million. And then Iran is clearly not going to play. Not going to play.
Nope. They don't see any reason to play. And if I was them, I'd feel the same exact way.
It's just
a moment in time as far as they're concerned that might not last.
And why? I don't want to get into the whole discussion about our Congress and why we just let the bad guys just walk all over us. I just can't even.
They sound like Trump.
Yeah, without the bad hairdo and all the things that go along with it. Well, the FBI seem to have caved in. Now they have supposedly the means to unlock the iPhone. At least they're telling us this. Maybe they're trying to spook us.
The whole thing is questionable.
Yeah. So we'll see how that... Again, I thought there's only 10... Well, the older iPhones are four-digit minimum for... what is that? Is that 1,000? That's 1,000, right?
No. Password, I forgot what four is. It's not that much.
Right. Now there's six on the new ones. But anyway, I know we talked.
You can make it as long as you want.
The pin you can make as long as you want.
Yeah, all you have to do is to go inside your settings, and there's a setting there. You can make it as long as you want. You can make it like a, you know, 100 numbers if you want.
Well, let me.
Then it's pretty hard to crack.
Yeah, but I this whole thing is crazy. It's just crazy.
Nobody does it.
Let's I don't know if we talked about this, but the whole idea that I know we talked about this on, I think it was the last show, about this whole idea of the terrorist acts are having limited effect and all this. But you know, we saw this week, we saw Brussels, Iraq, suicide bombers. We saw that an Egyptian airline, which is not it's a terrorist act, but it wasn't, you know, from ISIS or something like that. They were hijacked.
Yeah.
And the markets don't even care about it anymore. It's like just passé.
Yeah, ho-hum.
Ho-hum. No big deal.
Oh, that's interesting.
Let's take a look at the closest to the pin competition. We have a winner from the Ford competition. And this is pretty good, actually. You and I, let's see where we came in. I was at $13.10. You were at $14.27. The actual price came in at $13.06. So I was 4 cents off.
You were good. You nailed it.
Yeah, I was waiting for it the last moment to kick up a little bit. But the winner came in at $13.05.
Oh, geez. Yeah, nice.
Nice. James Chopko is getting one of the very highly demanded DH Unplugged t-shirts. And did you know that we officially have a model now that is modeling the t-shirts for us?
I saw the model on a Twitter feed. I retweeted it.
Yep, we have... I'm going to give a little shout out to Vivi Hugo, who is now the official DH Unplugged model. Actually,
is she union?
Well, she actually, I think she is actually. We'll have to figure that out. She's
actually a model?
Yeah. She's done Toyota commercials. She's done, she's all over Delia's. If you go to Delia's, she's all over that website and a few others.
Oh, so we have a real model.
Yeah, a real model.
Not just some pretty girlfriend.
Right, exactly. We have a real model.
Now that means she'll be able to sell it.
Yep. So check
out. She won't just be standing there like a schlub. She knows how to sell it.
Exactly. So, by the way, when you do get the shirts in the mail that we send you, make sure to send us back a picture. We'll post you. We'll have a whole lineup of all the winners in their t-shirts.
Yeah, we'll put it on Twitter.
Yep, exactly. So that was for Ford. You can go over to DH Unplugged, check that out. We have U.S. Steel running. Michael Kors was recently announced. And coming up for beginning entries U.S. Steel, I guess, is ending. Michael Kors is going to be coming up. Let me think about this 1 second. U.S. Steel.
Now next Tuesday I have to take off.
Okay,
it's my birthday.
Very nice. You going up north?
No. We're all going to New York City.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, it's gonna be a little chilly, but there's stuff to do.
Yeah. Well, we'll be taking off, but we have Transocean, so you can find out all of the closest to the pin contest and exactly how it works and what to do and how to guess, et cetera, et cetera. Over on DH Unplugged, and make sure you could see the our official model. You could follow us on Twitter. And by the way, on Twitter, we'll also announce the contests when they're open, et cetera. I'm trying to think about the Ford closed. I guess U.S. Steel is about to close. Michael Kors. We have like a 3-week cycle for each one, so you could check those out. I think that I'm pretty far away from U.S. Steel at this point. You're much closer. All right, let's move on. This is a fascinating story. There's a hedge fund manager. His name is Kyle Bass. He was actually born in Miami. He was working for, I think, Bear Stearns, started a hedge fund, made a lot of money on shorting the housing stocks, the big short concept and all that, and is really big on looking at shorting China, Japan. He makes some pretty big bets, very outspoken, very smart guy. What I found out today I thought was fascinating. This guy owns $20 million of nickels. I don't know. I read the story and I don't even understand it. He's advocating owning physical gold and platinum rather than financial instruments tied to precious metals. Who owns why would anybody own $20 million of nickels? Is it 100% nickel?
Well, I know, they changed the penny, I think like in the 80s or 90s too. It's not a penny. It's not made out of copper anymore. And if you save the old pennies, the ones that are made out of 100% copper, they're actually worth 2 cents in copper.
Oh,
Okay, so you want to save all the. So
but no. But you can't. You're not allowed to melt down currency.
No. Well, who's going to know?
What? All right. Okay.
I mean, if I had $20 million of pennies, I would have $40 million in copper. So there's a value there. I don't know what a nickel is made out of.
Well,
I don't think they were made. Were they ever made out of nickel?
Well, let's look this up real quick.
Because people are allergic to nickel.
What is a nickel? U.S. nickel made out of? Let's see. It's 5 gram, 75% copper and 25% nickel.
As oh, aside, that's, some, yeah, that's worth at least a dime then.
Really?
Well, I'm guessing.
Huh.
That's it might be, I mean, if a penny, which is a very small piece of copper, a nickel's got more probably got more copper in it than a penny. I don't know.
There's also it a silver be,
maybe
half.
There's, oh, maybe there's only 5 cents worth of copper in there. I mean, and it was always 2 cents, and now it's worth five. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Here's the bonus question. How much does $20 million worth of nickels weigh? I did the math.
Too much.
I did the math. Where do you keep it, first of all? And I did the math. If you take a look at our little cheat sheet here that we're talking about, the show notes, if you're on that.
Yeah.
You see where the bonus question is? How much does $20 million of nickels weigh?
Yeah.
You can follow along at home. Take your cursor right after the question mark and highlight going right.
Oh, cool. You did one of those little tricks.
Yeah. Four. So, what is that? This how much it weighs?
4 million pounds?
Yep.
It weighs 4 million pounds.
That's what I think so, yeah. 20 million nickels is, you got to multiply that by five to count the number of nickels there are, right?
Yeah.
So you have 20 million.
What would you multiply? Wait.
20 million nickels.
20 million nickels. Okay. $20 million of nickels.
Yeah, $20 million of nickels. Yeah.
So that's what? That's
100 million nickels, I think it is. Is that right?
20.
It's 40. It's 400 million nickels.
Okay.
Right? 20 times 20.
Yeah.
Okay. Then you have, all right, so that's what I did. And then you have, it weighs, they weigh, what did I say they weigh?
You didn't.
I didn't, but I'll tell you in a second. They weigh, I have this here, yeah. 5 grams, I think it is. 5 grams.
So what you're saying is
5 grams.
400 nickels weighs a pound. No, 400 nickels weighs 4 pounds. Yeah, so I can see that. I think 400
did
nickels
I do this
probably
right?
does weigh
400. Did I do this right? 400.
That would work.
400 is 5 grams. So you take, and oh yeah, so you take the 400 million times 5 grams. That's how many grams you have, right? 400 million nickels times 5 grams. That's how many grams you have.
Okay.
Then you
I need a pencil and paper.
Yeah, well, I'm telling you.
I used to do all this stuff in my head.
Yeah, just follow along here. 400 million nickels times 5 grams. That's how many grams you have total. Then you divide the grams to, you know, you have 28 grams and divided by 16, and that's how many pounds you get.
Right.
Bottom line, 4 million.
Okay.
Where do you keep it? I'm still coming back to the same discussion.
This basement.
Oh, boy. Anyway, that's quite...
I heard a story once from someone I knew that their father bought, had some soybean futures and took delivery.
Oh, boy.
And that was like a disaster, and he didn't know what to do with them. So he put the soybeans in the basement of the house.
And what happened?
And because of the, he didn't know what he was doing, obviously. It was just wasted a lot of money, I guess. But the soybeans absorb a moisture, and it lifted the house off the foundation and knocked it over.
Okay. Did you see this with your own eyes?
No, it could be a bullshit story, but it's a funny idea.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like you know, if all of China jumped up at the same time, the Earth will rotate off its axis.
That could happen.
Right? Okay. Speaking of China and the Far East, Nippon, one of my favorite airlines, All Nippon Air, by the way.
Nippon
Telegraph and NTT, Nippon Telegraph and Telephone Corporation,
yeah.
The former telephone monopoly in Japan, has agreed to buy the technology services businesses from Dell. $3 billion. So I guess Dell is unwinding some of different part.
Yeah, Wisely.
I thought the services part of their business was a much better play than their hardware.
That's what I was led to believe.
Yeah, well, obviously somebody wants to get rid of it. Things aren't going as well.
I think it was overrated to begin with, the services part. Everybody, you know, there was like HP went into that because they were all copying IBM.
Yeah, everybody copied everybody.
Yeah, everybody copied everybody. IBM started doing it. They got rid of everything except services pretty much. And I think some research is still going on and, you know, patenting. And then, so let's do that. That they're smart. They're making a lot of money on these services. Let's do that and just dump everything else. And now, so the whole industry is a mess.
Now they think about this industry, all they do is copycat each other in every regard. So they have hardware, which was important, right? Then they go into services, and then they go into cloud. I mean, it's kind of, they just follow along what everybody else does. Nobody has any kind of, there's maybe one company that will have one piece of ingenuity and a new idea, and then everybody just piles on.
It's a fact.
Yeah. It all probably boils down to one person, just one person sitting there with all the ideas, and then you're just doling them out, and then everybody follows along. Same thing with the smartphones. I mean, you know, come on, let's be honest. All smartphones are essentially the same. Just a little bit of a different package, different flavor, different this, different size, different color.
Pretty much all the same.
Pretty much all the same. You know, last week we talked about how Lumber Liquidator shot up on reports of settlements that appeared kind of...
One of your favorites.
Yeah, kind of fishy. You know, that we saw that just weeks before that there was a settlement pending, but then there was a discussion about how the state of California and the CARB Commission came out with a report that said, oops, we had meters and it should have been yards, or we had feet, it should have been yards and meters.
Outrageous.
This is crazy. So then they come out the following week with only a few $1 million fine, and everybody's all happy that, well, Lumber Liquidators are going to do great. Not that anybody, you know, Lumber Liquidators is the flooring equivalent of Chipotle. The other day somebody said, do you want to go to Chipotle? I'm like, no. I don't know why. I'm just being stupid, but I'm not going. There's probably nothing wrong with the food here. But they're tainted.
What's the point? There are places that have not been busted for bad food.
Right. Even if they do have bad food. So, but Lumber Liquidators, you know, who knows what really the saturation of these various carcinogens are inside of their wood and, you know, the use of the, I still don't even understand why they use formaldehyde. I guess as a preservative, obviously, right? But
I think it's used as a solvent.
But why would they have that inside the wood? Or inside,
I think the wood is soaked or something to keep it from, I think it's part of the finishing process.
No, it's like a
I'm just talking out of my ass.
No, I thought it was, but you remember when you were in whatever grade in high school and stuff, you had to dissect the various things. They're always in formaldehyde because it's a preservative.
Yeah.
Anyway, so now the stock popped. And we talked about how that was a little bit fishy. And then, of course, the stock has now retraced all of the move back down to where it started before the announcement. Speaking about stocks moving lower, the troubled company Sun Edison, which was like, as we call it, the hedge fund hotels. You had a lot of companies.
We were talking about that last show.
Yep. Company is now in real trouble. It was in a lot of trouble. Now it's in really a lot of trouble. SEC is investigating about the recent report that the company put out a few months ago about their liquidity and their state, you know, how the company's internal assets and balance sheet and all that stuff. And now the SEC is investigating the legitimacy of that report. Stock was down 50% on the news.
Yeah, blew it.
50%.
Should have shorted it last show.
It's now under a buck. I thought at $10 or $11, I'm like, wow, that's pretty low at this point. I actually bought it for myself at like...
I consider that a fail.
You can still short it if it's going to go to zero. You make 100%.
What's it at now?
75 cents. 50 cents? I think it's at 50 cents.
I thought it was like 80 or 8 cents, one of the two.
Yeah, we could take a look at that in a second. But that it's amazing how this was a darling. What I really find fascinating.
Oh, yeah, I feel sorry for anyone who bought into all that green investing.
I mean, some of it, I mean, you look at a Solar City.
Once in a while, most of it was a complete fail.
A lot of it was seeded by the government.
Yeah, they lost their ass too, as once again, the idea.
Once again, government-based processes and projects somehow ended up failing with enormous amounts of money going down the drain.
Taxpayer money.
Yep. So what I thought was interesting, though, was that how some of these companies have such similarities. You know, you look at a Valiant. You know, you have the smartest people in the world, supposedly these, you know, really brilliant hedge fund guys that are buying all the stock in these kind of companies like a Valiant or SunEdison, but they're so convoluted. They have so many moving parts and secondary companies and maybe even some off-balance sheet type of deals that are going on and all sorts of things that are happening. And it was like, okay, all these guys were in the know and these stocks just ramped up. But once things kind of came out, what that may not have been as legit or there was some kind of question mark in front of any of their dealings, or there was a slowdown of the company for some reason, it, you know, we really find out how terrible it was what's being run. You got to wonder, were these guys just running the stock up to running it up and trying to spread how great the company was, or they just got totally bamboozled themselves? Which then leads you to the question of, if they did get bamboozled, how smart are they to begin with?
I think it's a never-ending question with these guys. It happens all the time.
All the time.
But these two, that one operation back when this guy was some sort of a genius and he had figured everything out and he had some mathematical approach and then they, you know,
you talking about the currency deal that blew up the
it was huge.
Yeah, no, I'll get it in a second. If not high. Somebody in the audience is probably freaking out. It was back in the long-term capital.
Yeah.
Long-term capital manager. Yeah. Long-term capital. That was, you know, they knew what they was doing and then it just got totally twisted.
They knew what they were doing and they just got creamed.
It started a global panic.
Yeah. It was one of the biggest of collapses ever.
Yeah. Speaking about collapses and maybe areas that you don't want to miss, Yahoo, we're at it again. Now they seem to be going out there and they're possibly going to be for sale. And guess what? Microsoft may be in the deal somehow, some way.
Yeah, the price is high enough again for Microsoft to be interested.
I got to tell you something. Seriously, I don't think in a long time I've been this disappointed with a CEO. Just absolutely.
She was never qualified to be CEO. It's just the eye candy. Let's put her in the CEO. She did a good job as a product manager or whatever she was at Google.
And by the way,
it was nonsense. I always thought it was crazy to put her there.
And just before anybody gets up in arms about John now being some kind of down on women and all that. If it was a good looking guy that had no particular talents, he would say eye candy as well, right?
Same thing.
It has nothing to do with male, female.
Somebody looks good up on the stage.
Right. It was a good...
could be a guy, could be a girl, right. Could be anybody. It doesn't make any difference. Could be a poodle.
Oh, well, maybe.
Bad choice.
Poodle may have done better.
What were the credentials that she had that qualified her to run this crazy company? There are plenty of good people out there that could have run that company. And they keep picking these... I don't know. This the board of Yahoo. They're crazy.
And they had so many unbelievable properties that one of them could have been good.
Every time, they could have spun off all that stuff and made tons of money. Every time they had, here's what bothers me about Yahoo. I've written about it numerous times and I bitch about it constantly. So here it is again. They will develop something or buy a little company or they'll develop some crazy product that's really cool. And then they'll run it and it is one of their little, sub product. I don't even know what you'd call it, the subdivision. I'm not sure. And then they'll fold it like 2 or 3 years later. And when I read the press release about them folding the product, the same thing goes through my head. I've never heard of this product. And then I start reading about this product is really cool. I wish I knew about it.
Yeah.
And this happens over and over and over with Yahoo. And then they buy crazy stuff at the top price, like broadcast.com, which is my absolute favorite one. That's what made... Our guy who runs the Mavericks, Mark Cuban, is what made him a 3X billionaire. It's just a website.
You know, I guess the difference between, let's say, a Microsoft that has all the various sites and things of that nature, and well, that came second. First, they had obviously the software that was deskware, then it moved to the sites. And at Google, and a Yahoo. I think the big difference between like all these companies and why Yahoo's failing, because Yahoo is strictly, they don't have anything else but web and content. You know, Google has Android and the phone and search, of course, and amongst other things. Microsoft has the desktop. They also have hardware and they have services, et cetera. But Yahoo doesn't have any of that. I mean, they don't really have a paying model that besides advertising. I mean, do they? Do you have to pay for anything on Yahoo besides advertising?
Not that I could think of.
I don't even remember them having any major cloud space discussion. I mean, they were before everybody. You think they could have capitalized on some of that?
Well, they did.
Well, they made money. They did fine. They made a lot of people a lot of money, of course. But it's kind of, they stagnated. It's like a lot of people fall.
Oh, yeah, it never became a powerhouse.
Yeah. Went the way of, it's going to go the way of, what was that? Alta Vista.
Yeah, Alta Vista.
Alta Vista. Dogpile. Dogpile's probably still around.
Dogpile is just a, it's not really anything except a site that looks at other sites.
I remember when Yahoo was more powerful than Google. Do you remember those days?
Oh, yeah. I remember that was in the late 90s, from about 97, I think 98 was the peak, because I used to do a show at Tech TV called Big Thinkers. I took it over from some guy who developed the show by stealing my show, and then I had to do his show because he quit. So I'm doing the show, and I always did the same thing on every show. I asked them, what did they use for a certain, what, you know, some famous person, like the guy who invented the cell phone. So all kinds of people that were on that show. And I'd always ask each and every one of them, what was their search engine? And they always said Yahoo. Every one of them, without exception. Because I was using Google at the time, because I was a big Googler promoter at the time. And it was amazing to me. And I said, well, start using Google. You'll like it better. But it was just outrageous. Everybody said Yahoo. They had so much mind share. It was unbelievable.
You know what show that I liked that you did? Cranky what? Geeks.
Yeah, that's what everybody says. That's their when the whole thing is kind of, except for our shows, the podcast, but in terms of video, when everyone looks at all these different things I did, Cranky Geeks seems to be the one always. Yeah,
you used to have those little blue, you used to have these big blue index cards. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
And you used to like throw them and stuff.
Yeah, well, I always threw stuff.
That was a good show. Anyway, finally, a California judge ordered a now-defunct for-profit college chain of...
Oh, wait. I got an anecdote.
Oh?
Talking about throwing stuff?
Yes.
So I was at CNET years before that doing game reviews, actually. It was all written for me, and I was just a host with Gina St. John. And at the end of every game review, I would take the CD, because these were CD games, and I'd fling them.
They must have been thrilled about
that. So one day... thing took a nice curve and hit a cameraman right in the cheek and cut him.
Oh, God.
Yeah, that was not good.
They sue you?
No, nobody sued me, but it was embarrassing.
Anyway, these for-profit colleges are big trouble. I think is Corinthian, I think it was, the one that's defunct now. It's been ordered to pay $1 billion over the company, over claims that the company misled students. So, company's defunct, have no more money, out of business. Where's the $1 billion come from? Anyway, think on that.
Yeah, worse. That's the way to do it. Okay. We'll write you a check.
Yeah. Why don't you just have them pay like $10 billion?
$1 million. $10 million. $10 billion. $1 million billion.
Yeah. Who cares? Just.
It's all bull crap.
Yeah. Crazy. Let's get to the stocks. This is a game that we play each and every week. We have maybe some names, maybe not. Some ideas that are good. Sometimes ideas that it seems that not so good lately with me. John stealing the show. And I think I racked it up the latter part of the year into January, so you kind of stole it from February on so far. But anyway, we talk about some stocks that we like. Yeah, it is.
I've noticed this. Like once in a while, oh, look at that, doing really well. And then next thing you know, it's all red.
Well, you can check out this on DH Unplugged. We have a list of the stocks that are live and what we have. We have some rules on this. Of course, to let you know, this is a risky proposition. Don't use our recommendations as recommendations. Do your own research. Talk to your financial advisor. John C. Dvorak, myself, or Horowitz Company clients may own the stocks that we mentioned, and we will note that, of course. Why don't you take a look at what we have? We only have, I think, only your stuff is left.
I've got Deutsche Bank as a long. It's up 7.8%. I've also got Southwest Airlines, which just still hanging in there because your stock is gone.
Gone.
So the JCD versus AH doesn't make any sense, but it's up 19%. That's good. So I'm losing out on the battery company, but that's a penny stock, and I still expect that to do well.
You got stopped out.
I did?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it's in that color. And I had 20% stop?
Yeah, it moves. Like, it was up 8% today. It moves all over the place.
Oh.
You need like a 30% stock on that thing.
I'll keep an eye on it anyway. I thought it might be something I want to put my money in. And then everything else is I only have one more pick, which is a Twitter short.
Yep, doing nicely.
And I'm up 5%. And then the rest of the stuff is yours, and you're down on everything.
Yeah, Restoration Hardware came out with earnings tonight. They were up about 5% on a lousy earnings number.
And that's your good. That's your one that's doing okay.
But we'll see what happens with that. After hours, they went up about 4%. They finished after hours down 3%. So we'll have to see how that plays out. And Japan hedged equity fund, you know, with the dollar moving as low as it has with the recent move by the Fed. You know, Japan is very sensitive to their yen movement. So we'll see what happens with that department there. Now I'm going to take a short. I don't have it listed on here. I'm going to take a stab at something. I think the run has been historic over the last few weeks.
For what?
For the one I'm about to tell you. The stock I'm about to tell you.
I'm waiting.
I didn't tell you yet. And I think that it's possible that there is nothing fundamentally that has changed so much that has caused the stock to be at these levels. And there is the potential for, if in fact we do see a little bit of a kickback on copper and possibly gold, we'll see, that Freeport-McMoRan may be a short candidate here.
A short?
Yep. Just playing a very short term, very short term here. I think
you're probably right.
I think it can go back down to 7.
It could go back lower than that.
I mean, there really isn't anything that's gone on.
We've been trying to play this stock, if anyone listens to the show a lot, for the last year.
Yeah. I think we did. I think we bought it long once.
On it, and, you know, I
think you made money on the long.
I think I did.
I think once. I'm looking down on this list here. Let's see. Close 2016. Let me look at this list over here. All right. Close. Freeport-McMoRan. You made, we lost 10% on a long, actually. That was both of ours. There's another Freeport-McMoRan. Nope. We didn't do it this year. Okay, we only did it once.
We have been looking at it a lot.
Yep.
All right, I got one.
Oh, good.
It's an insider guy.
Mm-hmm.
The stock is DWRE.
DWRE.
Yeah.
What does that stand for?
Demandware.
Oh.
Now, the only reason I'm buying this is because this guy is the CEO and president. And he has been selling this stock since God knows when. I think for the last year and some. Because he's got May and stuff. It's been a long time. I'd have to. Okay. I think he first started selling it. And yeah. He's been selling it for over a year.
Mm-hmm.
And now he bought, first time.
Oh.
If you look at his thing, it's except for an option in the middle of it. Sell, 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 sell. And it was up when he was selling it at 73, 49, 53, 59, 61, 60. So we're looking at the situation. I've talked about this before, where the guy seems to know what he's doing.
Yeah.
He's selling, and then it goes down. Well, I haven't seen any record of his buying, but now he's buying at 34.
Oh.
So the stock has been...
Now it's at 38.
Could have bought a little earlier. It went a little lower than that, I think, at one point. But he sees something that he thinks is going to make the stock go back up. And I say the target would be 60, but it could be 70.
What is his position?
He is the president and CEO.
Well, if he doesn't know, who does?
Well, in today's age, I'm not sure that's true, but it should be true. Yeah, if he doesn't know, who does?
Yep.
So I think this is a great insider play.
All right. Well, we got it listed. And like I said, you can find out more about this and everything that we talk about on the show over at DH Unplugged. And, of course, play the game with us close to the pin, which you'll have a good opportunity to play right along with John and myself. You can follow that and more things on Twitter. The Real Dvorak is John C. Dvorak's Twitter handle. Mine is Andrew Horowitz, one word. And, of course, do not miss an episode twice a week of No Agenda, if nothing else, for the artwork. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, start listening. And of course, for the great phrases and all the fun things that are talked about on that show. And then Disciplined Investor on the weekends. I had a guy stand me up this week.
Oh, no. Well, see, this is a... I can go on about that for a while. Isn't that great? This is the reason I don't... You know, people say, why don't you guys do interviews on No Agenda? Or even this show, for that matter. And because I've done all these kinds of shows over the years, you know, mostly on cable. But I've done all these sorts of shows. And booking is really horrific. And it's also... And these people stiff you, or you get talked into bringing somebody on the show and they're not interesting. It's a nightmare.
Yep.
I actually like to watch some of the cable shows on Fox and CNN where they have these guests, or even better is PBS NewsHour where they bring these guests in and the guest has nothing to say.
Well, the problem is the easier they are to book, the worse they are.
That would make sense.
Right? The more they come after you, the more you don't want them.
That's probably true. Now, we always had bookers on a lot of these shows, and they were always moaning, and they never could get good guests. And there's also talent. The booker is a talent in and of itself. If you watch the, you know, I always look at the difference between the CBS late night show and Jimmy Kimmel and Jimmy Fallon, which is the NBC show.
Right.
NBC shows always got the best ratings, always had the best ratings, no matter how good. The best of the shows, those three shows, is Jimmy Kimmel. It's got creative writing. They got great bits. It's a fantastic show. But Fallon, if you look at the guests of the three shows, except sometimes Stephen Colbert gets some obscure guests that are very good. But generally speaking, Fallon has the best guests because NBC, even though they're not the number one network, they're the third network, they have the best bookers.
Yeah.
They got some bookers that have been there, I guess, since time immemorial, and they're really good, or they have the best Rolodex, something.
Well, I mean, Jimmy Fallon, I think he's a great talent, by the way. He has stupid bits, really stupid bits.
They're very stupid.
I mean, this something with Dog Jeopardy plays, or Puppy Jeopardy, or something like that.
Yeah, no, he's got, compared to Fallon, compared to Kimmel, the other Jimmy, they've got some fantastic bits. Where they go out and ask people about, you know, what they think about a news item, and the news item's completely bogus. Right. And the person starts making it up as they go along. They have that uncensored, unnecessary censorship bit where they cut a bunch of clips together. It looks like somebody's cussing, and then they beep it out, and it looks right. like it's a right. horrible thing to say. Just very creative and very adult bits.
Right.
But they don't have the talented bookers.
Right.
And Kimmel's in Hollywood, and Fallon's in New York, where it would be harder to book.
Hmm. That's true. Well, at least it used to be true. I don't know if it's true anymore.
And that's my story.
All right, well, we will talk not next week because it's your birthday. By the way, John, of course, accepts all sorts of gifts. Really, nothing is too small. Am I right?
So yeah, absolutely.
Birthday gifts and celebrations and you know, direct deposits, things like that.
Direct deposits.
All right, I'll talk to you in a couple of weeks, bud.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Right, bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pocket, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.